This is Rich Ogis, and you are tuned into American Workers Radio with your host, Michael Bihosh. You can listen to our rebroadcast anytime on the Internet from the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com.
You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products, with your host, Michael Bihosh.
Well, welcome to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM Radio. And as Rich Logis just mentioned, you can listen to us not only here on the radio at 860 serving Philadelphia in the tri-state area, but also on the internet simply by going to AmericanWorkersRadio.com, and right on the left-hand side there is a listen live link. Well, today we have a full group of our panelists here with us. Larkin Connolly is sitting here all dressed up, having come from another conference this morning. Also with us is Rich Logis, who you know as the principal of RJL Technology Integration and a great opinion maker here on American Workers Radio. And also Mark Andel, who is the very well-known and famous founder of Made in America Store. And of course, he's part of the American-made movie, and we'll be talking about all of that, what's going on. Hopefully, by next week, we'll know more and more about how the movie is moving along in its presentation at theaters across the USA. Well, before we get started today, I want to just mention that American Workers Radio has become a place to discuss ways to support American workers and the businesses that employ them, a place to discuss why America lost so many of its jobs, and a place to unite people and promote the Buy American Made campaign, which is really helping keep Americans employed. We're working very hard at that process, and I want to thank all of our listeners. As I said earlier, go to the phone, invite family members and friends to tune in. As I meet people in my travels, they have great compliments for Larkin, Rich, and Mark, and all of their opinions. And in after Labor Day, we'll be doing some additional things to get people more involved, talking about ways they are helping American workers and some suggestions that they would like to see enacted to help us. And by the way, everyone, today is a very historic date in American history. It was actually on August the 28th, 1963, 50 years ago, that hundreds of thousands of people marched on Washington, D.C. to join Dr. Martin Luther King at a march for equality and jobs. Now, that event is most well remembered by the words of Dr. King, "I have a dream." And that was on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. I'm sure that you'll be seeing a dozen and one reports about that on the news media today. But one of the main reasons for the historic march on Washington 50 years ago was the fact that they wanted jobs, because Martin Luther King and all of his supporters knew that jobs allow people to be independent and be able to support themselves. And that is something that is really a problem in the USA 50 years after that great march and 50 years after that great speech. Now, more jobs for Americans, encouraging more businesses to expand or open here in the USA, is really the reason that we're promoting American Workers Need You, the Buy American Made campaign, and all of us are working so hard here on American Workers Radio to unite people. I'm going to begin today and ask Larkin, what would you say if you were looking back 50 years ago on the efforts of Dr. King and his march to bring about equality and jobs?
Good morning, Michael. Good morning, Mark and Rich, Henry, and all of our listeners. Thanks, Michael. It's kind of amazing. Here's what I've always said about Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech. It's 17 minutes in duration. It's not a very long speech at all. And I remember when I went to Catholic school many, 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 many years ago, we had to memorize parts of the Gettysburg Address and different things like that. This should be in our schools. You know, our children should memorize this speech by Martin Luther King. 17 lousy minutes, but it was delivered in a way that I don't know that it can ever be duplicated. And it was so timely and had such a terrific message. And are we still struggling with it? Yes. The social barriers and the racial barriers that he mentioned in his speech, are they still existent? Probably. But I don't think as nearly as severe. I think
they're very, very different today.
We've made some ground.
As far as the jobs are concerned, the job training and the industrial arts, that's really been a problem for 50 years. And well, that's got to be addressed.
That knows no racial design at all. That cuts across every nationality and race. You know, our schools have let us down. They truly are. They're not relevant. They're not teaching what we need to teach our children. They just plain aren't relevant. So, but Martin Luther King, Dr. King's address is even applicable to that. There's no question.
Absolutely. Mark, as you heard my opening remarks, what would you add to that?
Yeah, no, I just think you can't stress any more the need for jobs. I think it fits well right now. You know, everything we talk about and everything we believe in, Mike and our crew, we got to continue to make people aware, educate people on their importance of getting involved, from voting to your purchase. So I don't think, a lot has changed for the better, but a lot is still, in need of change.
You know, Larkin mentioned a few weeks ago that the people who were going out on the streets 50 years ago were demanding rights and voting privileges and things like that. Here we are 50 years later, and it's hard to get 10 to 15% of the people to go out and vote in any particular election, which is really very discouraging. So, I mean, we have got to really look at ourselves. And the reason I bring up all of these subjects is because each one of them has something to do with why businesses left America. They went elsewhere because labor was cheap, number one, but people were interested in using their talents to stay, well positioned in those jobs.
And Michael, we talked about the low voter turnout, and I happened to be having a conversation with somebody who listened to that very program, and he said, well, it's not like that in Texas. It's absolutely not like that in Texas. 15%, you ought to be ashamed of yourself. And I said, well, what kind of turnout did you have for the last primary? And he said, 28.
Well,
28%. So all of a sudden now 30% is an acceptable number for voter turnout.
Rich, what do you have to add to our opening today?
Guys, good morning. And I wanted to ask Mark and mention my understanding is the directors of the American Made movie were on, I think it was MSNBC today.
Yes, I received, I had sent the USA Today article that the gentleman, Alex Bungowski, made that the little YouTube clip. I sent these to my guys. Nathan McCall and Vincent Vittorio are in New York City as we speak, and they sent me back a text. So they've seen this video I'm talking about, but they said we're on Mr. Joe's this morning, which is on NBC affiliate, and they were on, and yesterday they were on Fox Business. They've been in New York since Monday because the big release of the movie is this Friday, the national rollout, which will the American-made movie will roll out in Georgia for 10 days, Chicago for 10 days, then it goes to L.A., and then it goes to New York also the following week. So there's quite a plan, but yeah, they were on. I did not. Did you see it, Rich?
I haven't.
I did not see it yet, but I don't know if there's a link yet, but I know they were on first thing.
Michael, you've been working on getting the film in Philadelphia. I believe the film is coming to Philadelphia.
Well, we're hoping. We don't have the exact date yet, but when it comes, we'll be ready to go. We're looking for a special screening, and then, of course, if they bring the film at another time, we'll be happy to take care of them at that time as well.
Yeah, and Mike, we've been on that, and I know you've been patient, and I thank you for that. And Sue's back. I had Sue off for a week, but the film crew's been real busy, and they're working with that theatrical distribution center, so everything's still in plan. Mine and your dates aren't locked in yet, but they've got the first 2 weeks locked in, and there's a lot on the AmericanMadeMovie.com website. The new trailer is out too, which I just seen myself yesterday, which finally they finished about a week and a half ago, which is pretty neat too. So take a look at that on AmericanMadeMovie.com.
Okay.
Mark, why are they rolling the movie out that way? I mean, usually when a movie opens, it opens in, you know, all American cities on Friday, September 6th.
Yeah, usually, see, what they did different was that 32-city, 32-day tour was kind of their Friday release, Larkin. That was kind of replaced that, so they hit them to cause buzz in that on the East Coast, the 20 states they covered in that 32-city tour. And then this is their plan they worked with the theatrical distribution center, which is different, and I don't have all the answers for that. It's quite involved, though, how you release a movie, and they want to nail it in certain areas where they hold 10 days and then 10 days in the next theaters. I know the cities they picked are real important to get the proper exposure first. I only sat in one meeting when I was in New York City, but launching a movie, there's hundreds of documentaries. This one happens to be a great one, really quality and a very inspirational, but it's very it comes down to marketing again, so it's kind of it's out of my league in a way, but very involved on how they picked it, and I know they're being controlled with this distribution center they have the contract with.
Well, that'll do it. Oh, yeah.
You know,
that'll do it.
That makes a difference.
Well, we're looking to hear, and when we do, I'll certainly bring it out to our listeners 7 days a week here on 860.
Yeah, very exciting, though, and maybe that trailer, Mike, you can post for us. We just actually sent it out today, and we'll make sure you get that copy, too, because it shows, you know, it's a three-minute clip on the movie.
I got your text this morning, and I'm going to look for that article in the paper.
Okay, and that video, too. Yeah, very nice.
Thank you for keeping me posted. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I just want to return to our subject of the day. 50 years have passed, and still tens of millions of Americans are still in need of tens of millions of jobs. Larkin, if it was up to you, we talked about someone in Washington being in charge of the jobs. I tried to research that out, but I'll tell you, it was not the easiest thing to find out. It's simply amazing. I mean, these turkeys in Washington are just taking our money, sitting around, gorging themselves with the best of food and lodging and everything else, and no response. I have no idea. I went because I was going to contact the senator or congressional office, but they keep telling me that every time I call, they say it's a new crisis in the world, a new crisis in the world. I say, there has been a crisis in America for more than 50 years. Who's going to address it?
Yeah, and I'm pleased that you've upgraded Congress to turkeys. It's a huge step forward. You might be exaggerating a little bit. I think we got a bunch of chickens down there myself. At any rate, you know, it's cyclical also. I mean, we find ourselves at the low end of an economic cycle, and, you know, a lot of people out of work. What bothers me, not is the fact that we are so far away from what we would consider a finish line as far as Dr. King's speech is concerned. What bothers me is how little is being done by local, state, and federal government agencies.
Amazes me.
They told me this morning that Barack Obama, President Obama, was going to speak, obviously, at a very profound hour in Washington, D.C., as they celebrate this event, and that the main gist of his speech is going to be jobs. Really?
I can't wait. I will be watching with great interest, because I believe that when Barack Obama was running for president the first time around, his theme was, we got to get people back to work. We got to restore skills. And here we are 5 years into the event, and I'm still, you know, people are still every American. I don't want to focus on Barack Obama as a biracial person or anyone else. I mean, we are a colorblind society in America. Our job is to help one another so that we can move up the ladder. We've already helped the world move up the ladder by restoring industries in other parts of the world that should have been restored in America. Our companies left. The thing that cheers me up in doing all this is that I go around to stores, and they hate me come visiting and asking questions, but many of them are telling me, and I'm seeing newspaper reports and television reports, that companies are coming back to the USA because of the demand of people. Now, that should have been happening 50 years ago.
Or more.
That should have never happened, that we got to the point where we don't know who to turn to. The fact that we're sitting here wondering who is the man in Washington to turn to is in itself amazing.
And, Mike, do we need more lip service? You know, we need action. We need it now, because in my business, I don't know how Rich is there, is it's tough. This fall is going to be very tough. We're still in very tough times, and we don't need more talk about jobs and work. We need more creation and more doing what they need to do to get it right, and limit, you know, less regulation for us, so us businesses can get off, you know, get off the ground and grow again.
And all of those things are true, Mark. Every bit of that is true. But I really, in my heart of hearts, think that the problem is confidence. I don't think the American consumer has confidence in what's going on anywhere. I mean,
or trust. Trust.
Trust is another great word, but it's confidence. And when there's no confidence, when you don't have confidence as an American consumer, you're not going to spend money.
Larkin, but many of our people who graduated out of school 5, 10, 15 years ago, they don't have any confidence because they don't really have needed job skills. They're all many liberal arts and things like that, but they don't need the job skills that could help restore industries in the USA. My whole thing is I'm trying to get jobs and job skills back here in America, so all Americans can realize the American dream, the dream that brought immigrants from around the world here to the USA for two centuries. They came here because they knew that America was a place that you could reestablish your whole life. And now we see, after 230 years, our young people have to reestablish themselves, and that doesn't make any sense to me.
And it's so tough on these young people, too, you know, with college choices and if there were skilled work choices. But the amount of debt they're accumulating from the start, and then we get into this health insurance issue. And, Mike, why that's so hot on my topic, because by September 1st, which is a Sunday, we have to make a move on our health insurance. And I called my guy in, and we battle everything. So we battled this health insurance, and like I've said before, I cover 50-50 of my employees, which is a $250,000 bill for myself, the employer, and my employees for just health insurance, so we split that. But we needed options, so my plan was going up that $150 a month per family and $50 per single. So I called my guy in. He said, well, I can only offer two plans. I said, why can't we have a disaster plan? I don't like people quitting. So we did. We came up with three options for my employees, but this is another major cost affecting my company and the economy because, like you said, Larkin, you don't have confidence, but you don't have that disposable income. So everything leads to, you know, back to the plan zero.
And, you know, the thing that is of concern, Mark, and you'll understand this, is that we're hearing about all the school board budgets across the USA. Everybody's in a crisis situation. They're talking about, though, making sure they have monitors to give out breakfast, lunch, and dinner, you know, all these disciplinary people in place. But nobody's talking about restoring the industrial arts program, the skills that could give those young people the future that could help them throughout their life. Rich, what would you say about that?
Well, guys, I think all of us as a panel, I don't mean to speak for you guys, but I think all of us as a panel are forward-looking. And for whatever the reasons, Michael, were for why jobs, why manufacturing went elsewhere, went overseas, one of the things that the American-made movie takes a look at is how the cost of American-made manufactured goods are actually, on average, quite competitively priced. Now, that's good news in the context of our pricing against some of the other international manufacturing behemoths. What has to also be taken into account is something that I feel like I mentioned ad nauseum, which is 20, 30 years ago, there were a handful of countries that weren't in a position to compete for global manufacturing. Some of those same countries are now developing the infrastructure, developing the manpower, creating an overall infrastructure to support and attract some of the manufacturing business that might be looking to leave some of those bigger countries that they're in now. So my question always is, first off, do the elected officials even know where these emerging countries are? Do they even know who they are? Are they aware of the fact that countries not named China and India are gearing up to start enticing and attracting? And I am not sure that the answer is that the elected officials as a whole know that. And if we miss the next one, because I'll tell you, no one around the world is going to wait for us. What other countries around the world are gearing up for, and I guess ultimately competition, we're told, is good, right, guys? Competition is good. Well, other countries are looking to become and are gearing up to become more competitive. And we know that some of the same companies and businesses that might be leaving where they're currently established, well, they're going to have offers on the table. The question is, what's our offer look like?
That's right. That is exactly right. But the big thing is, as we mentioned earlier, is who is the person that's going to lead that fight for jobs in the USA? We don't have a leader that I know of. I can't find the person.
And I didn't mean to point my finger at Barack Obama. He just happens to be sitting in the big house, in the big chair. It's up and down the line. It goes all the way down to city council people in cities across this country.
But I'd like to see the president do something to say, I want to have a panel of people come in and let them go on the C-SPAN or wherever, and let's discuss the whole issue. In fact, it was back in 1882 that the first Labor Day celebration was in New York City. And then in 1884, the United States Congress passed an act making the first Monday in September a legal holiday to honor American workers for all of the skill, strength, prosperity, and the well-being that they provide to America and its economic well-being. Well, I'd like to see that return. In fact, in 1884, the United States Congress passed an act honoring American workers. I would like to see the United States Congress pass an act mandating that 50% of everything sold in America should be made in America. If they couldn't mandate one thing and put an act in, why can't they do something like that? Mark, I mean, does that sound like a sensible idea?
I'd love it. You know, that's what we need. We say 50-50 support, Mike, you know, support the country you live in and have fair trade, 50-50 fair trade. It would be ideal. You know, if we have some, I always said, even Fisher-Price, the headquarters for Fisher-Price Toys is 5 minutes from me, and they don't make one toy in this country. Boy, if they made a percentage, if there was some type of rule regulation where they had to make 25% or 50% or even 10% at this point, boy, that would be outstanding. You would, grow this country.
We still need jobs back in the USA. There's simply no way we can dance around it anymore.
And people don't realize the relationship between that factory and how many from the restaurants, the accounting, how many businesses one factory or one manufacturing facility properly ran can support. That spider web effect, a lot of people don't grab how many businesses the one big plant supports.
You know, last week, Rich said something, and I think that was the statement of the week that people brought up to me. He said, well, I bet you there is a Michael Blihosh in some other country talking about making, more jobs available to our people. And, you know, that really hit people. And they said, yeah, where are our press people? They're worrying about who was dressed and how they were dressed during some entertainment presentation. But not one person's coming up and talking about how important the jobs for our people are.
Michael, I thought you were going to say my statement of the week was, let's have another round, guys.
Oh, we got to do it. It's got to be done. I want to tell everybody who's listening, who's wondering what that means. We had a wonderful visit a couple weeks ago when Rich Logis came to Philadelphia. It was really unbelievable. Larkin and Henry and myself and Rich were able to enjoy, and we're looking for a big reunion that includes Mark. Now, of course, we did have Mark with us at one event at Spirit.
I love it. I was imposed.
And the hard thing for me to get a grasp on is the fact that I just got out of jail 3 days ago.
That's what Larkin was trying to say. You know, if I look this way, maybe they'll, you know, not recognize me.
So, Logis, you are welcome back in town, but don't tell me, ever tell me that when you're coming.
I really appreciate it, guys. And all the businesses we went to, all of them, the local businesses, I can see where, and I can say this as an outsider, right, not living there, I can see where some of the business struggles are. And Mark, as I understand it, in the film, there's a county or a city in I think it's South Carolina that adopted an initiative to pursue international companies.
Yeah.
And again, I've not seen it, so pending my viewing of that sounds, see, that's a case where state and local is having a measurable, it's not just talk, lip service, as you said. They're having a measurable.
That was beautiful, effect. Rich, because they brought in a Germany company. They brought in Mercedes-Benz, of course. But they go real right in that movie, so that's great. Like you said, you got foreign investors coming in and investing here and then creating jobs here also.
Well, that's fine. Foreign investors in the USA, great, as long as Americans are employed. I mean, we've been doing that throughout the centuries, going and investing in foreign countries. Foreigners can definitely come invest in America. Our people are at work. You know, they provide the structure. One business feeds off the other. It's a great deal.
And well, we're global, baby. We can't choose. We can't in the United States pick and choose our growth. In other words, we can't cherry pick it. I have absolutely no doubt, guys, no doubt whatsoever, that there are so many companies overseas who are itching to come here to do business, to hire here, to manufacture here. My question is, where the hell are we pursuing them, though?
Yeah, who's giving the invitation?
Where are we going after them? What are we talking? You know, where are we going? What are we saying? Are we getting on phones? Are we wheeling and dealing? This is what we have to do collectively. That's what elected officials, in part, need to do. And Mark, you point out about where we buy things and how it has, where something's made has a direct impact. There are costs that are leveling out. That's the good news. The potential bad news is, are we ready for the next wave of job creation, which is going to dwarf what we've needed in the past? So forward-looking, can't dwell on the past. Going forward, are we preparing ourselves? I'll tell you this, there are a lot of countries that are getting ready for it. Are we, though? That's the question. Are we?
And I agree, Rich. Yesterday's gone. I mean, we got to learn from it, move on from it, go forward, be positive thinking. And, again, skilled workers, we got to train and change our schools to train these kids. Bring them through at 6th, 7th, 8th grade on business tours and get them interested and make it okay with parents and guidance counselors to have these trade schools and learn these skills that are going to be needed for this future growth. On a positive note, I talked to a senior producer with the movie who lives in Gwinnett County, Georgia. He said he never felt more Made in America presence in that area in all his time. He's 74 years old right now. He said even Walmart had just bought $750,000 in shoes from a local shoe manufacturer. So that's very positive, Mike. You know, there's positive movement going on.
Very much so. And I have to say that even people that I meet in my travels are telling me they go into stores, they see more American-made flags on products and even, you know, for Labor Day sale and stuff like that. American-made, you know, support American workers. They're doing it in a very, very professional way, but it is moving forward. And I think a lot of what we're doing here has helped to spur it because we haven't given up a day or an hour or a minute.
And I'd like to thank our panel and all the listeners because it's working. Consumers are demanding Made in America products, and it is changing this country.
It's a two-pronged problem. We can't just say we're going to develop a job program and go out and find people jobs. We have to repair our education system. We have to be able to, if you attract a new company into Philadelphia, are they really going to come charging in here looking for people with an engineering and math background when we've got 168,000 kids in a school system that should be twice its size, but charter schools have taken those children away? We have teachers that are screaming and yelling that they want to continue their pay. They don't want to cut any jobs. Everybody, it's me. Education has got to get fixed. And we've also got to do everything in our power to encourage small businesses, existing small businesses. Last year, SCORE started 37 new small businesses in the city of Philadelphia. That number has to be quadrupled every year in Philadelphia.
I agree.
To get us up to speed, because you can't give somebody a job unless you have a job out there available.
Exactly. And that is why the people in the school districts do not understand when they are out protesting that they want more money. They should be protesting why they want more money. We want to improve our industrial arts program. We want exactly what are we going to do with the money. We don't need any more babysitters in the schools. We need people that are actually going to direct people what they can do with the rest of their life. Every one of us here has done our best. We want nothing more for anyone other than what we're trying to do for our own children and our families and our friends, and that's bring them up the ladder of success. Because being on welfare is definitely not what Dr. Martin Luther King had in mind 50 years ago. The job, when I look back at the history, historic signs that were at that particular event 50 years ago, 50% or more of them reflected on we need jobs and job skills, not that we need more access to welfare. Welfare is only a way to hide the fact that we don't have jobs. If there were jobs to send people to, you wouldn't need welfare. You'd be able to direct them from welfare to work. But we don't have the jobs, and that's why I'm so pleased and honored to be with great people like Rich, Mark, and Larkin to discuss these issues. And with our efforts and the more people coming in and the newspapers and the radio stations that are rebroadcasting the commentaries and bringing attention to our broadcasts and the rebroadcasts, which our link for the rebroadcast has gone way up. I'm really pleased to report that as well. Gentlemen, and all of you, ladies and gentlemen listening, may I take a moment to acknowledge a few of our very special sponsors. And as we begin to get closer to Labor Day, Mr. Leon Mankowski, attorney at law, wants to wish all of you the very best. And I would like to mention that there is going to be the 48th annual Polish American Festival and Country Fair taking place at the National Shrine of Częstochowa, located at 654 Ferry Road in Doylestown, Pennsylvania. This is a huge event. You'll find everything in the kitchen sink. It begins this Saturday, August the 31st, continues on Sunday and Monday, Labor Day, as well as the next weekend, September the 8th. The 7th and the 8th, and it's from 12 noon until 8 p.m. If you'd like more information, you can visit PolishAmericanFestival.com. Also, Polka Deli is located at 2719 East Allegheny Avenue. Stop by where you'll find a great selection of Polish-style meats and deli products. And if you're doing some planning to come to Philadelphia or maybe go to New York or the South Jersey Shore as we end off the summer season, may I encourage you to check out our internet site, TriStateVisitors.com, which has links to all special places welcoming summer visitors and visitors throughout the year. And also for all of your auto body repair needs, Mr. Chester Chanowski has two locations to serve you. And during this Labor Day holiday, he joins with all of his staff in wishing you the very best. Best wishes as well from Martin Bednarek, who is the president of Washington Savings, Kazimierz Wielki Bank. And they have five locations in the Philadelphia area to serve you Visit the Washington Savings Bank near you, or you can give them a call at 215-698-9400. And also, best wishes for a great summer from Mr. Frank Spula, who is the national president of the Polish National Alliance, an organization that is located in 50 states across the USA. Also, best wishes for a great Labor Day holiday from Dr. Eva Maciak, who has two dental offices in Philadelphia. For more information, you can contact Dr. Eva Maciak at 215-739-2787. And may I also encourage you to spread the word about our internet site, AmericanWorkersNeedYou.com, as well as American Workers Radio. On that site, you will find many interesting points, including information about the American-made movie featuring one of our great panelists, Mark Andel. There's also the Blihash plan, the U.S. debt clock, which is very interesting. And you'll also find links on there for AmeriLoop with Jude Watkins and Go for America, Made in America with Mike Sessions, as well as many links to our supporters. And if you're not available to listen to the whole broadcast or you want to share it with someone, the link is right on the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com. Well, I want to return to our subject of the day. And in fact, as I was looking at some of my back Labor Day commentaries, I noticed that in 2007, when the recession first began, I encouraged people to simply go out and spend more money on American-made products and to get the ball rolling, to speak up where they shop. Of course, at that time, I'm talking about in 2007, many people were a little more timid. I'm pleased to say that they have now learned to become more vocal. They do speak up where they shop. When I go to stores, people at the top of the store, the managers, the personnel say, yes, many people come in and they lay it on the table. They're not buying it. They'll wait a while and they're not going to do things that are going to hurt American workers. What we need to happen is that idea to hit our schools and our businesses to open up here, and our national elected officials to bring that corporate tax down to about 20%. 20% is more than enough. What would you say, Rich?
Well, guys, it's been well documented on our program just how much business is overseas in the billions, probably tens, hundreds of billions that companies have overseas that, again, I would think they'd very much look forward to coming back here. But the moment they step back into the U.S., it's a 30-35% tax bill. So with the invitation to listeners and elected officials to offer their ideas, I really think about this very often, and I struggle to come up with an idea other than simply waiving, or at least mostly waiving, those obligations. Because I do believe if those companies are back here, we are going to see jobs created by virtue of them coming back here. If they're busy elsewhere in the world, they can be busy here.
And they'll save that shipping money and all the other things. And by the way, as more jobs come back here, more of our dollars will be circulated here in the USA. That's the bottom line. And our job skills, if you can get the clothing industry alone to come back here, you're talking 10 million jobs right off the bat. Because
we have to compete with nations with even a 10-11% tax rate. You know, look at Ireland, and I love Ireland. I've been there. I cannot fault them for remaining competitive the way that they are. They've, despite their debt and their unemployment, they have a lot of U.S.-based businesses who do their European business there. But we get none of that, and they're able to compete with us in that geographic area of the world. And On one hand, we don't want to see unemployment, but on the other hand, our interest is first and foremost to the United States. Our interest first and foremost is to what's best for us, not what's best for anywhere else in the world. So having said that, we've accepted that 0% is better than 10% by virtue of the fact that businesses, and there are hundreds of some of the biggest companies in the world who are U.S.-based, who are over there. And that's just one area. I don't mean to single them out. There are many countries like that that have been able to offer those labor and tax incentives.
You're right. 0% is better than 10%. You're absolutely right. And you can just take a look at that debt clock and see that that's exactly what it is.
And that debt clock, Michael, for as I tell people all the time, that debt clock is actually much lower than what our true debt is. Because when you factor in the IOUs, well, you need to quadruple or quintuple, whatever the times five is, quadruple or quintuple that debt. Because eventually it's going to come time to pay a lot of those bills, not just the debt that we see.
That's right. We're talking at least a $60 trillion debt owed by the people of this country, whether that's
right.
Credit card, houses, school loans. I mean, that in itself. School loans are what really bugged me, because I remember when I was going with my daughter for college, I attacked the guy nicely, of course. And I said to him, why doesn't the school have its own loan program? Why are we going through banks and government? I said, if the schools had offered the funding, then they would really be able to administer better. They would know where the students are going with the money. Maybe they would cut back on the liberal arts program and start focusing on programs where their children would get a job after they left school. And the guy says, well, you know, we don't get into that, and the government wouldn't allow it. I thought to myself, I said, wait a minute. The government wouldn't allow for you to administer the monies that are held by your alumni and your Christian Brothers Association? Doesn't sound right to me. But see, government involved itself in this type of business. And as Rich mentioned in the past, I think school loans is a huge business for the government and a huge part of our debt.
Well, the federal government makes more profit from student debt than any company in America. ExxonMobil, number one, Chevron, number two, Apple, number three. At least that's the most recent estimate. Neither one of those companies makes as much money in their company than the federal government does from student debt.
Now, would you agree that it would be better for the universities to be funding this? That way they keep a better handle on what's really happening in their education system. Because right now the money comes in to their pockets from the government, and you know, it pays the bills and they don't care. But if they were in charge, what would be the difference? Larkin.
I just have an amazing, amazing fact here that just fits right into what you were just talking about. How many states do we have?
50?
50.
Yes,
50. So in these 50 states, 40 of those states, when we talk about the public payroll, state payrolls, 40 of those states have the highest paid employee on the payroll. So you stop and you think, okay, that's Pennsylvania, Ohio, New York, Florida. The highest paid person in the state on the state payroll is what? Anybody want to guess?
Education.
Schools.
Well, you know what? 10, the remaining 10 are associated with the institutions of higher education. They are, in fact, the school presidents, the head of the law school, the head of the medical school. There's one. I'm looking at the list right here. It's just amazing. The highest paid employee in the state of Alaska is, in fact, a college president.
And how much does he get?
I don't have the numbers. I wish I did. I'll have them next week.
Oh, I'd like to see
somebody
that.
Tell me what the other 40 are. They're on the state payroll. They're the highest paid employees in their states, in their respective states.
I really believe that the schools should go in the business of making a profit from loaning money to their students and their students' families.
You're avoiding
instead of Uncle Sam. The question is, Larkin, if the schools had to do that, would those professors and those presidents get the kind of dollars?
Okay, let me answer the question, because I've obviously stumped Mark, who hasn't said a word, and I've obviously stumped Rich, because he's not even breathing. So here's the answer. 40 of the highest paid employees in their respective states are football and basketball coaches.
Yeah, I remember the UB, University of Buffalo, he made $380,000, I think.
40 of the highest paid executives in the 50 contiguous states, 48 contiguous states we have, are basketball, football, and in the state of Massachusetts, they're hockey coach.
Unbelievable. Now that just goes to show you. I mean, this whole thing went off the balance wheel so badly. How can
you want to straighten out education? I can tell you where to start.
Right.
You're right.
You know, Mark, we were talking some time ago about the schools coming out to your company there to General Welding to see how you were doing, how you could bring more kids. How's that been working out in the last 6 months or so?
Good. We're just about to start back up because school starts next week here. We have that plan we did with our local public school, which is a student comes through, once he signs up for 48 hours, they get a half a high school credit. And they get to see, learn whatever, if it's welding, if it's machining, if it's CAD drawing or social media, they can pick. But they learn. But we're trying to get that relationship and get them experience out in the field. But I want to do it. We did it at 12th grade last year, so now I'm pushing to get 6th, 7th, or 8th, or maybe 9th graders, before their graduation year. So it is going forward. Insurance became an issue, believe it or not. We got through that battle, making sure, we got the proper insurances. One other thing I'd like to add with the, when we talk about welfare or, people not working, do you think our founding fathers ever had an inkling that people would not want to work in this country?
No.
People
came. People came to this country, Mark. You know your own family, and
yeah.
Rich, your family, and Larkin. Our families came here in search of what was called the American dream all over the world. For them to come here now, I see that from some of the tourists when I ask them point blank, and I love to ask this question, would you like to move to America? Majority of them say no, because I have better job opportunities elsewhere. Now, that's pretty scary, because yeah. America was always the place you came for the better jobs.
To live your dream. And hard work produces luck. A lot of people say, I'm lucky. I said, hard work produces luck. Hard work produces opportunity. But I just, that was never in their plan, I think, that people wouldn't want to work or have a good work ethic.
Yeah, my father used to always say, the harder you work, the luckier you get. You watch and see.
Yeah, and the more enjoyable life is as you meet people and, not only do just the sitting in front of the television or worrying about what rock star is appearing. The schools, recently, as I mentioned before, I was speaking to some of the school administrators, and I asked a question over and over again. How can you help me support the Buy American Made campaign in the schools with the bigger kids and, of course, promote the industrial arts? Their main response to me is this. Before we can do anything, we have to get the money to pay the teachers who are in place right now. There's no concern about the future, no libraries, no computer, nothing. It's just we want the money to pay the teachers.
That's a shame, because in New York we have the lottery system, which I became a lottery outlet just to try to draw traffic with the store. But I found out on our scratch-offs they bring in $80 million a week just on the scratch-off. And that money is supposed to all go towards education. So then I did a little more investigation. Well, like our local school gets $2.5 million, they say, from this lottery system of New York. But when the school gets it, the state doesn't give an extra. The state doesn't give the portion they're supposed to, and then the school gets extra money. The state does not give them any the money that is contributed from the lottery. So there's, I was looking at that system. It's amazing. It's supposed to help education. But yet when my kids played lacrosse last year, I had to buy their helmet and everything. Yet we pay real high school taxes. I pay $73,000 a year with my four places of school tax. So I don't know where, like you said, the money isn't going to the right places.
When, and another thing is, we talked about that when we had our consumer advocate. We cannot really find in detail where the budget goes. It's a lot of fuzzy column items, exactly where and how. You have to research, like Larkin just found out about that.
Well, I think the coaches, I guess we just found out today, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, it just becomes absolutely amazing. If you want to have a party in your brain, go try to figure out the Philadelphia Parking Authority and where all that money goes. It's absolute insanity. It's like $7.5 million a month. We should have that. We should have solid gold schools around here, because that's exactly where PPA's money is supposed to go.
And yeah, we should
figure that out.
Yeah,
we've got so many people making six-figure incomes at PPA that are called special consultants. It's not even funny. Nobody ever questions it.
Well, that is very – where can we find that? I'd be happy to post it on our site.
Well, I'll tell you, the Inquirer and the Daily News have practically sunk their ships trying to get on the inside. It all should be public information. But what's going on out there is shameful.
Yeah, I know. I hear
it's a big part of the problem.
Yeah, we don't have public access. They want to watch us, tell us what to do, where we should do it, what time we should do it. But we have no access to know how much they're paid and what they're really doing day to day to help us as a people. When I speak to some of our local elected officials, I don't mean state or Philly, but our congressional delegation, every day it's a new excuse why they can't get involved, why they can't participate.
And PPA, it's one of my favorite subjects. There's a network program on called Parking Wars. And for 2 years, and I think it still might be going on, the main town that they filmed in was Philadelphia, the Philadelphia Parking Authority. And, you know, I watch that program and I turn it off and I say to myself, now, isn't that an indictment of what's going on in Philadelphia? We ought to show that to all of the companies around the country and around the world that we want to attract to Philadelphia. What a great image of the city of brotherly love, the parking authority.
Larkin or Rich, how many elected officials do you think could run a business and survive past a year?
Well, I
watching the store, you know what I mean, taking care of the money.
Yeah, I talked to a city councilman 2 months ago.
Oh, by the way,
never
Larkin,
held a job. Never
I have
held
to
a job.
Tell you,
outside
they brought
of city
that
hall.
Up to me this week. Somebody said to me, he mentioned a particular city council person, Larkin, as never having a job. Is that a fact? And I said, I don't know.
It's absolute fact. I didn't make it up, but he stared me right in the eye and admitted it and said, I've always worked in city hall. I mean, I got out of high school and went to work for my councilman. And on it went, on and on and on it went. And he couldn't run a newsstand on the corner, I promise you. And he's out there passing legislation that makes it mandatory to give sick days.
You know, there was an article.
For small businesses, mandatory to give sick days.
You know, there was, which thankfully did not pass.
Right, it did not pass for the third time.
But there was an article in the front on the front page of the Daily News of a gentleman who's been unemployed for over a year, maybe a year and a half, and he has a big sign out there. He comes out every day dressed in a suit, and it says, "I'm not looking for your change. I'm looking for a job." And then the report brings attention to the fact that we have 57,000 professionals in the city of Philadelphia looking for jobs. And that's a scary situation, that we've never seen anything like this. Say 10 years ago, that number was down in the 20s. Now we're back up to 57,000 because a lot of the industries collapsed. They've merged. The banking institutions have all changed. Computerization has changed a lot of the way things are done. But the problem is, these professionals have to redo their whole world. So they may have to go to SCORE or somewhere else to consider a business. But there are just too many. In fact, I'm going to ask Henry if he could link that on our site, special reports link, so that people could see that article. It was really very, very interesting. On the second hand, we had some of the local businesses are starting to restore here in the Philadelphia area. I'm very pleased to say that there was a candy company on Market Street, the Shane Company. It was there for 98 years, and all of a sudden the family was going to retire and just close the place up. And the Burley boys, who owned another little business down the street, decided that they would go and open up the reopen the Shane's Company. A Shane Candy Company on Market Street, a famous company, and that's what they did. So we have a lot of small companies, small businesses, which I want to ask that you promote the small businesses. As you know, we do that here on this broadcast. It's one of our national initiatives to go out and support all businesses, local businesses, especially the first Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of the month. Now, that doesn't mean not to go out all the time, but go out of your way that first weekend and, of course, spread the word about National Small Business Weekend and the many other efforts, our radio broadcast and the Made in America, American-made movie, the American-made store with Mark Andel, and all of the other efforts that are moving so beautifully ahead that are helping us to bring a change to the USA. I was reading an article in the Inquirer that mentioned that Walmart is going out on many areas of the country to find providers for more and more American-made products. And that's happening because people are walking in the door and demanding American-made, or just walking away saying, I don't need the product at this time.
And I heard a very interesting, what brings to mind, in listening to another talk station here in town, a gentleman and called in, and he had a really interesting thought. He said somewhere in the early century, last century, the Federal Trade Commission, SEC, whoever it was, the federal government, decided that it was time to break up Exxon. That they were, well, they weren't Exxon back then, they were Esso. They were just too big, way too big. So they said, we're going to break this up. And he said, I'm wondering if it's time to break up the big boxers, Walmart, Costco, BJ's, all of the big boxers that come in there with prices that for like and kind stuff that the small business in the same town can't even buy it for.
That's very interesting, Larkin. Maybe it's time to do something different and bring change to America, the type of change that we're discussing. And I want to thank our listeners for going out of their way to speak up where they shop. I'll be at the Polish American Festival at Częstochowa throughout Labor Day weekend, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, and next weekend as well. I'll be up by the main stage. If you see me, come by, pick up some of our American-made information, our newspaper, and let me know that you tune in, and thank you for spreading the word. Larkin, closing remarks.
Well, my closing remark is to my good compatriot, Rich. That was a joke, Rich. If you ever give any thought to coming back to Philadelphia, make sure I'm the first one that knows.
And Mark, we're hoping to see you in Philly one day soon as well.
Will do. Have a great Labor Day, guys.
Well, have a wonderful Labor Day. Rich, my very best to you, Mark
Andel,
and Larkin Conley, and Henry Chaplinsky, and from all of us at Radio 5000 and American Workers Radio and the Polish American Radio Network, I thank you for your support. Have a wonderful Labor Day, and I'm looking forward to seeing many of you at Częstochowa. Until next Wednesday at 11 or this Saturday at 11, I wish you the best.